that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Colin Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find a flick that monster boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Yak Mala, Yak Mala. Welcome back, my friends, to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. I am your host. I am 8th Dan Stanadu, and I am so happy to be with you today. Today we are entering the Octagon with Season 11 again, and we are going to be talking about Nick Boxer's Animals Wearing People Clothes concept with Food Fight. And so, Nick, I know you're here. Tell us about your Animals Wearing People Clothes concept.
I would, but frankly, my dear, I don't give a spam.
Good work. Good
nice,
work.
Nice. I like that one, yeah.
Yes. This concept is as simple as it sounds. I really thought we were leaning too far into the genre entertainment there. I thought, and I know there's lots of Boogaloo out there that is more family friendly. Oh, this film is debatable whether it's family friendly.
Extremely.
But that is a Boogaloo. I kind of wanted to do something completely different, and I can honestly say I found it. Uh-huh. I don't know how well it'll do on the scoring, because I think I got a couple zeros in there. But this is definitely a family film, and the concept is simple. Any film where there's an animal wearing people clothes counts. We can pick it. So that's the concept. It's
wearing people's counts. You said any movie where animals are wearing people's counts.
I'm in.
People's clothes. I apologize if there was any confusion. Although that's a season. I think I've picked my next season.
All right. Well, Jack, say hello.
And actually, this film would qualify in both categories.
To a degree, I suppose, yeah. Food Fight. Wow.
All right, yes. So we know Jack is here.
I remember when you picked this, you're like, I have a movie. It's going to score a 0 on Norhearth and budget, but a 10 in all other categories. We will see. Yeah. I have a suspicion it may not do that.
And then we also have Jim. Jim.
I'm very glad to be here.
Little known fact, I was one of the team of 20 hired to do food puns for this film. So I've got an insider look at it.
That to me was what made this film just an absolute chore. Like, it was okay at first when there's a few at first, but when every line of dialogue, there's no characterization of story because every line of dialogue is focused on making a pun. And it's just constant. It's worse than Batman and Robin. Like, it's just constant, and it just made it an endurance test.
All right, well, Nick, this is your movie. You did this to us. Describe it to us.
Do I look like a Dairy Queen? Come on. No, I can sort of describe what this movie is. Not really, because it didn't know. But yes, this is an animated film. At night, the supermarket comes alive with Ikes, or icons of food products. Many of them recognizable as brand names. This movie got licenses for all kinds of shit. I mean, We got Mr. Clean. We got Charlie Tuna. We have the Fruit Punch guy. I don't know his name. They're all in here, at least, like, just in passing. But our main character, Dex, he's a serial icon, and he's in love with Sunshine, a raisin icon. I know, crossing of two worlds. But all of a sudden, Sunshine goes missing, and he doesn't know. He's heartbroken and, you know, loses all hope. But then the supermarket gets a new product, Brand X. And Brand X's Ike is a hot tamale. And he sort of is interested, but doesn't really know what the hell is going on. But then Brand X starts getting all of
I'm getting bored.
Yeah. Well, this movie is not boring. It is boring as hell, so...
Which one is it? I'm sorry. Like, I'm
boring as hell.
Come on, keep it rolling here.
But Brand X slowly starts taking over the entire store, and icons start dying, and it's up to Dex to figure out what the hell is going on. Well, he does, and yeah, this is not a good movie in any sense.
Then stuff happens. Okay, I'm going to kick off with trying to work out the internal logic of the film. So, on the surface, we have a bit of a Toy Story-esque, when no one's looking, the characters on the cereal boxes come to life. And, you know, fine and dandy. It's interesting that they got so many licenses. I assume that's all the companies that don't want to be Hasbro and saying no to Toy Story. Hasbro famously said no to having their characters in Toy Story and have kicked themselves ever since.
I thought that was Mattel.
Was it Mattel?
Barbie's Mattel. So,
okay.
Barbie's in Toy Story.
Later.
In Toy Story 2, not 1.
Not the first one. G.I. Joe was also offered a spot. So we get that. Like, that's your overall concept. Brand X starts moving in. They start knocking off the icons. And somehow, like, this is the part that I'm kind of stuck on, is if they kill the character at night, that product stops being carried in the store. Really? Is that really what's happening?
Then it goes to the deletion section, whatever that was called.
Yeah, there's that heavy-handed Nazi metaphor.
Yes,
that's its own challenge. Because it's not a concentration camp. They call it something else. That it's everything's being discontinued essentially. Is that actually like what's supposed to be happening? Like, did I read that?
I believe it is.
And then the guy that runs Brand X knows about the icons. It seems like a lot of work to go for one store, honestly. I think that's what I was
going to say. Especially
there
that
is
one.
No guy, because I thought the icon was inside the guy's suit, the Christopher Lloyd character.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I'll have nightmares.
Oh,
everyone.
The animation of that character, who's like just got the shakes and like,
the icon can't drive the people suit. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's the issue. Yeah, it just seems like an enormous amount of work for one store.
A small store. It's like a mom and pop owned store. Like, it's not even like this is a chain of like Safeway or something like this. Yeah. No, this is like one dude owns his grocery store. Brand X is gonna start. It's like grassroots Brand Xing.
That's right.
You know, I think you guys have put in way too much thought into this movie.
Oh, God,
that's kind of our job. That's
But in fairness, it's because sometimes you have to, like, there's some things that you watch, and if you don't try to put in a little bit of extra time, all you can do is weep because you watched it. And so I was trying to to really get through in my head to parse that, like, okay, I watched that. I need to be able to explain in some level why I watched that besides, well, Nick made me do it on the show. And that's still 90% of where I'm at, is that Nick made me do it.
Oh, and we can't underscore how bad the animation is. I mean, the writing is terrible. Everything about this movie is terrible. But the animation is actually so incredibly bad that it is, I've never seen worse animation.
Well, I mean, it was supposed to, I think, originally come out in 2003, then 2005, then 2009. Then eventually it was sold off. It's you know, auctioned off the rights to it. And for $2.5 million, somebody made an opening bid and ended up winning it and just finished it as quickly as possible and threw it out the door.
How much you bet supposed they to have buyer's remorse immediately?
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's the thing is that they never made the $2.5 million back. Forget about, I mean, it only made $17,000 or something like that at the box office. Like this movie, but the thing is they were supposed to have the Looney Tunes style animation, and then they went to kind of motion capture, like, to finish it. Because
would that even have saved it, though?
They said the hard drives in an act of, it was called act of espionage, industrial espionage. Apparently, the Lawrence Kasdan, the director and guy who started the company that it made with, said that the hard drives were with the assets of the movie were stolen, and some of the animation that was part of the delay. And of course, who knows? I mean, the people. Apparently, he also would say to the animators things like, "Can you make this scene 30% more awesome?" And
the answer was no.
No, and he would ask them if they can do a retake because he thought it was like a live action film. Because this is the only thing he's directed.
That's amazing.
But I mean, he's been in the business for years. I mean, look at his producer credits; they're fairly impressive.
Well, yeah, like True Lies and stuff like that. He started Industrial, was it Industrial Light and Magic, I think it is? Industrial Light and Magic.
Threshold.
What's the one that James Cameron started?
James Cameron, Threshold. It's Threshold.
Threshold is the name of the animation company that he started. That's this. The company that he started with James Cameron is something else.
Sure. Well,
Lightstorm Entertainment with James Cameron. Is that what you're talking about?
Lightstorm. That's it, yeah.
Sure, yeah. Sounds good.
But he had never directed before, so I mean, he was completely out of his element, and you know,
yeah. I mean, there's some huge actors in that. Well, Charlie Sheen and other people.
The names are wonderful. I mean, like if you think about the talent: Charlie Sheen, Wayne Brady, Hilary Duff, Eva Longoria, Larry Miller, Christopher Lloyd, and there's even more as the list goes on. I mean, they're not A-list, but this is a large.
Think about it in 2002. Actually, I don't know when they did the voices. If it was 2002, they would have been bigger even.
It feels, yeah, I don't know if it would have been then or if it would have been later. I mean, that's who knows.
Yeah, I'm not sure when they would have recorded. By the way, like I just want to say the Threshold somehow didn't go out of business from this. They made the Lego Empire Strikes Back TV movie like a year ago.
Oh, wow.
Like they're still around. So amazingly. Amazing.
Yeah, because this is the kind of thing that definitely.
You would think.
But then again, I mean, when you talk about a 2003 released in 2012, and then Lego Empire Strikes Back, whenever that was released a few like year or three ago, that's still a huge gap between movies.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! No
that's question. That's a restructuring.
All right, where are we at?
I
was trying to find a comparison so that you know people can get a sense of what the animation looks like. Like a 90s, like a late 90s CG Saturday morning cartoon where you can't quite put the cash into it.
I would have gone with a Chinese recreation of something on American News.
Okay. To me, this is a video game. Like if I look at like a video game that came out in 2000.
Yeah, but not a good
it's the kind of thing.
One, maybe.
But it's the kind of thing where you have an animated character that's talking in the cutscenes. Like that's what this looks like. Only it's 80 plus minutes of terrible animated cutscenes. Yeah. Which sounds like a nightmare. And it is.
Chester Cheetah was supposed to be in this in a large role, and they pulled him back because they said you can't use him after, you know. So they had to make all these changes to characters. Count Chocolate was actually supposed to be the back character that's voiced by David.
Larry Miller.
They did have some of these companies got their mascots out of this thing wisely.
Good choice for sure.
Larry Miller just stole the movie when he came in.
Oh man, like Larry Miller was, what a like, weird
I thought
character.
It was the only good thing in the movie. Like he was good, you know, he's funny.
Wow, and you didn't like Wayne Brady's racist caricature,
dude.
of Dan. Wow. I mean, that character made Jar Jar Binks look politically correct.
Man, there were a lot of chocolate jokes.
Boy, were there. Well, I mean, they were throwing absolutely everything at the wall in this movie, hoping that something would stick. And absolutely, I don't know that anything stuck.
Honestly. No, this movie was Teflon. Nothing stuck.
Nothing stuck to this movie. Well, it figures so they're in a supermarket. And I mean, it was said to be the concept when it was pitched was Roger Rabbit meets Toy Story in a supermarket.
Fair enough.
And I can see some of that to a certain degree, but it's so incompetently done that all of those moments where you're like, you just swung wide right there, like you knew where you were going, but then you just drove away. I don't know.
Let's do this thing.
Oh no.
In our search for the ultimate B-movie, we rate each film in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
Bonus.
All of which are subjective quality. Our first category we call Schlock Appeal, and we start with Stan.
So you remember, where you talk about the bad makes it good, like that was the definition. Mm-hmm. I think. So anyways... Here's a little tidbit. Like, I watched this movie with my son Ben, because he's almost 12, and I thought, hey, sweet, Nick promised a family friendly movie, so
hey, so I decided didn't say family friendly. I said it was meant to be a family friendly movie,
and so I thought, okay, we're gonna watch it together. And after about 10 minutes, he's like he agreed with me that it looked like a video game. And then after about 20 minutes, he's like, what are you doing to me? he's like, congratulations, Dad, you've scarred me for life. and I can't disagree with that concept, because
I have to agree, this movie actively hates its audience.
because there's so much, like, you, besides the Nazi symbolism, you have the fact that there's so much overt sexuality that, you know, I mean the Brand X lady lifts her legs and like airplanes fly out between
that was at WTF.
And it is for sure.
And it's a long shot of her crotch.
Yes. And it's just like, oh my Lord, what, I mean, other than the fact that it's so poorly animated that you can't humanly, you know, mistake it for being real. That's it. Like, so I was talking to him, and I was just like, I don't know how I'm going to score this in Schlock Appeal, because it's not good, but there's something here that's weird. I'm just going to give it a 4, because I just don't know where the hell to go.
I'm going to just elaborate on your point there for a little bit. Has anyone seen the Parents Guide for this thing?
On IMDb, I thought it was a little heavy-handed. Calling this severe for nudity and sexuality is a bit much.
Severe.
That's severe.
Violence
that is
and gore, severe. Profanity, severe. Alcohol, drugs, smoking, severe.
Really?
Frightening
in comparison to other G or PG rated animated films, yes. In comparison to like Showgirls, no.
Compared to the kind of girls we go with, no. I remember that those IMDb ones are voted on. They're not coming from any kind of authoritative voice. They're just voted on. And I think if you go on IMDb, you're going to punish this film in any way possible.
Oh yeah, yes. Yeah. There's no doubt about that.
But anyway, I should score this thing. Schlock appeal. I think the recognizable actors and the recognizable product placement. I mean, I was excited about this film for several years. You know, I check in on it occasionally because the concept sounded interesting to me. I wanted to see Mr. Clean whoop the tropical punch guy's ass. I didn't know what I was going to get, and I would have been disappointed if I had realized this had actually ever been released. But I check in on it occasionally. So I think there is some schlock appeal until you actually watch the fucker. So I have to go with, I'm going with the 7.
Wow. I got a 2. Lawrence Kasdanoff actually plays the director that we're talking about there. Starter Threshold. He actually plays a character called Cheezle T. Weasel.
Oh, the most annoying character in the history of the world.
The character has a line that says, "You despise me, don't you?" And I thought that was actually the film talking to me.
Yes, yes. At one point, Van said to me, he was just like, "Man, I hope that weasel, when he goes down in the sewer, I hope that he dies in that sewer so that we never have to see him again."
Yeah.
I'm done.
Go for it, Jeff.
I'm gonna go down the middle and give it a 1. More heart than budget, and this is a reported budget of somewhere between 45 and 65 million, and God bless the person who hacked the IMDb page to mark the budget as $4.
Right.
Well, that's my new favorite thing ever. Well done. And I have to say, it was supposed to, the budget would have been, if everything had come out right, probably closer to 90 to 100 million.
All right, Stan, more heart than budget.
Now, if this budget was $4, then I would give it a much higher score than I am going to give it. But I'm pretty sure it's not $4, even though it just looks like it. It's 0.
You know what? If it was $4, I'd give it a 1, but I know it wasn't. So, yeah, 0. There is no heart. Nobody wanted to make this.
The director, Lawrence Kasdanoff, plays a character called Chester T. Weasel, who says, "You despise me, don't you? I thought he was actually talking to me." 0.
Wow. I'll
give it a 1.
1?
I'll give it a
1. All right. Whatever.
Because you know what? Here's the one thing about it. The fact that this is a film, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, but the fact that they never gave up on making it, like, they kept going despite everything that went wrong and kept trying
to release it. That's not hard. They just didn't want, they thought maybe they could salvage something.
Spookies did the same damn thing. I mean, it was.
That's just the sunk cost fallacy that, you know, yes. That throwing more money at something you've already blown your money on is a good plan.
Like this podcast.
It's a good example of that economic theory. A 0 for me as well. What the fuck moments?
I didn't write anything down ultimately, just because of the fact that the entire movie is just that questionable. But I hate when I come out with the entire movie is a what the fuck moment. And honestly, it was so painful to watch that even when something occurred, like, yes, that the one where her legs were up and the airplanes were flying out, you're like, okay, so that's what the fuck. But there's just so many moments where I just scratch my head, but I can't do it. 5.
Yeah, 5. Wow. I thought there was a lot more WTF in that. Because, I mean, there is so much going on that just doesn't make sense. I mean, right off the bat, you're introduced to an evil character just for a little warm-up named Fat Cat. He's a rat. What the hell? You have
probably one of the characters who was pulled out and they had to change. Because, like, one of the actual licensed properties that You know, because so many of them both pulled out because of the sexuality and the jokes and the innuendo. You still don't
replace cat with rat. I mean, even the mouth movements are the same.
But they might have to, though, because otherwise it could have been a lawsuit if it looked at all like the original. That's a theory. I don't know that for sure.
Yeah. The fact you have blatant SMN references in the Brand X stuff. I mean, she's wearing straight out SM gear in some scenes. The school girl outfit. Anyway, the Wayne Brady, Daredevil Dan being probably the most offensive character I've seen on screen in a really long time. The fact that the story does not make sense, and somebody at some point must have read this script and said, yeah, you know what, I'll throw millions of dollars toward this, is insane. Not to mention the fact that you have brand name actors willing to put their name on or name out there. I mean, they read the script.
I'm not sure about that.
Well, you know, they had to read it at some point to even say these words. They weren't improvising.
Well, no, but I'm just thinking maybe they just read their parts and didn't actually read the full script.
There is nothing good that they knew what the hell they were doing. In fact, anyone in this movie, including Ed Asner, unfortunately, you know, you knew you were in a bad movie. They're all paycheck players. Yeah. I'm going much higher on the WTF. I have to say 7 at least.
Man, how do I put 7 at least into the octagon?
By the way, I was thinking about, because you mentioned the actors.
I want to go higher. You could just go higher. And
have any of you seen All Dogs Go to Heaven?
No.
No, I saw some Dogs Go to Heaven. It's the prequel.
Charlie Sheen played a character, an animated character, in Some Dogs Go to Heaven. And if you compare the effort put in between this and that, like, it's tough when you can't see somebody to know just how little effort somebody is giving. But as far as you can feel how little of a shit Charlie Sheen is giving in this movie, like the effort. So I'm going back to a 0 on my previous category. So we are 0s all the way across. Because nice. You mentioned the voice actors, and it made me think about how little effort Charlie Sheen put in. And the WTF song.
Are you sure about that? I thought it was maybe the animators not trying to match the mouth movements at all that could have decreased the...
Yeah, that too. The WTFs from this thing is entirely all the puns, and to me, all the puns and all the sex jokes, the I'd like to buffer or butter your muffin, you know, or I'd like to pop your... corn, things like that. It's like, and it's constant, and it's just like, dude, I'm only giving it a 4, but because it's only the one thing, but it's constant.
I'm gonna be a little less charitable because it's I'm not as sensitive to the sexual stuff. I think it's not that much further than Roger Rabbit goes in most of the cases, so only a 3 for me. And if Charlie Sheen is hashtag winning, what's this, like hashtag tying?
hashtag paycheck.
Hashtag we'll get him next time.
Yeah, hashtag couldn't finish the race.
All right. Memorable moments.
Okay, well, the most memorable thing about this movie is the fact that I watched it. And...
Yeah, and you're not mixing this one up with anything else.
No. There are no moments within the movie that I'm going to say are memorable but mostly because I am going to be doing my damnedest to actually flush the fact that I watched this from my brain. You know, the most memorable thing is that I've probably scarred my son for life for watching it with him. So
that was going to happen anyway.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, what the hell, right?
Now when he's getting married and you're not invited.
It'll be a food fight. That's the problem. I'll give it a 2 just based on the fact that I'm never going to forget it.
Wow. I thought Christopher Lloyd's walk was... enough to score higher than a 2.
No, that just made me hate it.
That was nightmare inducing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I said right off the top, this movie actively hates its audience. But I think it's memorable. I'm not accidentally stumbling into watching this film again.
Thank God.
It's not like something like Spookies where the title is sort of generic and I might actually turn it on and it'll take a couple minutes to remember. No, I will not. One frame of this thing, I'm going, fucking food fight, turn the fucker off. yeah, I'm going high, 7.
Oh, geez. I'm not going so high. I'm going the 1.
I can't believe you're not going to remember this film. You want to watch your film.
Even the title, Food Fight, I wouldn't remember. If I saw that on TV, I'd be like, what is that? Is that like some Nickelodeon thing? Or, you know, like even the title is totally generic. I mean, the only thing to me that is memorable is the blatant use of the, as I mentioned earlier, kind of the Nazi type propaganda that's uncomfortable. That's the only thing that's actually memorable about this to me. You know, there is a fight between the characters. Why are the characters called Ikes? I don't get that.
Icon. It's short for icon because icon is such a long word.
Yes. you need a word that's exactly the same length.
Yeah. It did take me a while to figure out what the hell's an Ike, and then they said icons, and it's like, oh, okay, I got you now. I got you.
Right. Yeah, a 1 for me, I'm afraid.
Wow, that's charitable. it's not called "You'll Remember Not to Watch This Again." It's memorable moments, and there are no moments that will stick. So 0 for me. Crazy concept is our final category.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's interesting. If you just take the core, like, Toy Story meets Roger Rabbit, well, that's not crazy at all, because that just sounds like you want to make money. It wound up being exceedingly crazy because it's god-awful. So I struggle with this, but in fairness, I'm sorry, I'm just going to punish this movie a little bit and give it a 0.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to use your exact same logic, but not punch it. 5.
Makes sense.
Well, I got a 2 on this because, you know, this is the thing, I understand why Nick picked this, and I'm actually pretty glad he did, because this made for a very entertaining podcast. It's an interesting experience. But how do you have, by its nature, an animated family film? Like, if you were to say the concept of Toy Story, it's, you know, or in this case, you know, Sausage Party, which is a similar concept, but much crazier because it's
way
R-rated and much better. Much, 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 much better.
Oh, no, I can easily say I believe this is the worst film we have ever seen on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's the thing is by its nature, it's tough to have a crazy concept, because when you do an animated film, or WTFs even, you know, these things, when you do an animated film, and you've just opened up to everything being possible anyways. I mean, that's kind of part of the concept of the Toons and Roger Rabbit anyway. So it's just, like I say, I understood why you pick it and I appreciate it, but it's obviously a misfire in how we score these movies.
Oh, I did not think it would win. I really didn't. I just wanted to punish you guys.
Well, mission accomplished. Yeah. Well,
then bravo. 2 was what you ended up with there, Jack? You sure?
It seems high.
It's not liking the movie that I'm going to give this a low score for. It's that the concept itself actually makes a lot of sense to me.
Yes.
It's like, it's Toy Story. It's reframed a bit. We've got lots of places that we can do product placement quite easily. You can integrate them. Now, the way that they executed all of that is a whole different thing. But as far as the concept goes, the concept itself, it isn't that crazy to me. It seems fairly commercial. Just a 1 for me.
And to prove that, I mean, there was all the people that did provide financing for them and other territories and all the products that came in. If it wasn't commercial, that you wouldn't have been able to grab so many, you know, product placements to the point where it actually caused an alert for product placement for children.
Wow. Yeah, it makes sense because you do limit that because of the ways that corporations are always trying to sneak stuff in. And this movie is just, I mean, almost as much as Toy Story is a Toyapalooza. All right. So each season we have six secret modifiers. This film does get a negative one for having been low rated by the three people who did not bring it to the show. Also this season we have a modifier called the Will of the Gods, in which I roll an eight-sided die and the gods decide if the movie will be punished.
Oh, please pile on.
It did not. The gods.
Oh, roll it again. Roll it again.
Gods were favorable. Oh, bad news for the next two. I mean, just statistically, I should get an eight at least at once this season. I don't know what you know about odds.
What you know about odds is every single time you roll, it actually statistically is one out of eight.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
If you flip a coin and you flip 10 times heads in a row, you think, okay, next time it's got to be 10 or tails, but statistically it's 50-50 every time.
Yeah, but odds are different than chances, so yeah.
Well, actually, but this is more chances, it's a roll.
Yeah. I'm glad we had this conversation so we got something in the episode. This brings us to a final score. And oh my God, I can't believe we finally did it. We have a new bottom to the octagon.
Oh, yeah.
At 24.5 out of 100, a full 6.5 points below Among the Shadows.
So, congratulations, Nick. We are not doing your season. And in fact, your season concept is being exterminated with extreme prejudice.
Yes, that's okay. That's, I did not never... want to see Karate Dog anyway.
That season never can happen now. As punishment, you can't bring it back. No, here's the thing is, it's been Ninja 3 is iconic as in our, we found it in our first season. We have not topped it yet. We've come close as the ultimate B movie, you know, that we've searched for. I will be curious to see if we ever, I mean ever, top this as the lowest in the octagon.
Oh, yeah.
It might be harder to knock this off for bottom than it is to knock off Ninja 3, which has lasted 10 seasons or whatever, as in the top spot. So
because there's so many zeros with this. And we're usually not the kind of people that are going to give something a zero unless it's
we're trying
truly...
to enjoy the movie.
Yeah.
So apparently Nick is not familiar with this.
Well, if Nick was aiming to punish us, then he completely succeeded. So, you know,
it wasn't a punishment. It was more of a, I want the worst movie I could possibly find. And I think I did it.
Yeah, you did a great job. Yeah, if that's your goal, then great. Nailed it. All right. Jim, business. Let's do business.
Oh, sure. Why not? You can find that octagon that we were talking about on WeTalkPodcast.com. Also, they have a Facebook and a Twitter, and they'll keep you up to date on what we're up to. And we are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo, and please subscribe on YouTube and on your favorite podcast app.
Okay. Well, blissfully, we've come to the end of Food Fight, and we move on the Enter the Octagon season with my next season, Keep It in the Family, which is movies that star the lesser-known siblings of famous actors, and in this case, it's Frank Stallone in Terror in Beverly Hills, so I look forward to watching that. I think it should help boost our scoring again. Maybe not take over top spot, but at least it should wind up with a respectable score. So does anybody else have anything to add before we wrap this sucker up and go home?
I'm kind of cheering for your season because I want a Joe Estevez movie.
Yeah. Oh no. I get it. Like there's a lot of meat in this kind of season, I think that we could bring in, which would be wild and fun. But I guess
unfortunately, one shit wonder, Miami Connection is the third best scoring movie in Octagon history. So I think two movies from now, we got to be picking and deciding ours. And And that'll actually be in our next recording. So it'll be interesting to see what we come up with on that. But I do believe you probably can find a way, if you work hard enough, to fit One Shit Wonder into a Joe Estevez movie.
Perhaps. Well, I guess we will find that out in a couple of episodes. So, for Jim, and for Jack, and for Nick, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
Sweet cakes.